Well, good afternoon, and again, thank you all for being here today, and also for those of you that are home watching and listening. I want to start by thanking Virginians for their understanding of the need for closures and restrictions that began last night at midnight. Our team has fielded literally hundreds of emails with questions. We will continue working to make sure that everyone understands the restrictions placed on businesses under Executive Order 53, as well as the ongoing need for those restrictions. Since yesterday, we have seen an increase in COVID cases as well as additional deaths. Virginia State Epidemiologist Dr. Lillian Peek will talk about that more in a few moments. But it emphasizes how we are just at the beginning of this. We are not at the middle, as I have said. We're not talking about weeks, unfortunately. We are talking about months. And we are going to see these numbers, unfortunately, continue to rise. We will continue to work on measures to contain the spread of this virus, and we are focusing our efforts on making sure that our medical system is prepared. As a doctor, I thought it might be interesting and good to offer just a quick perspective on the capacity of our healthcare system, and we will continue to emphasize the containment of this virus. But when we talk about capacity, it includes our staff, our equipment, and our bed space. I have gone through mass casualty exercises while serving as a doctor in the United States Army, and I've also been an attending pediatric physician during particularly busy cold and flu seasons at our children's hospital. For those of you that may not be familiar with an ICU setting, an ICU patient during a normal time would be cared for by a number of staff providers, which includes nurses, an attending physician, 3 to 5 consulting physicians, in the case of COVID-19, a cardiologist, a pulmonologist, and an infectious disease specialist, a respiratory therapist, a pharmacist who's part of the team, an IV technician who takes care of vascular access, and then a radiology technician who would come into the room and take x-rays of the patient. So you can easily see that you could have up to 10 or even more healthcare providers taking care of each individual patient. Now, these are highly trained individuals. They are finite in number, so we need to do everything that we can to protect them and keep them healthy. We also need an all hands on deck for our staff of our medical facilities. We are exploring ways to make it easier for qualified medical professionals to help out. This includes reworking our licensing procedures and considering use of medical students and others. We also will be making better use of our Virginia Medical Reserve Corps. The VMCR is a force of dedicated volunteers who stand ready to support the community in the event of a public health emergency such as this. We have more than 8,000 deployable volunteers and more than 1,500 volunteered just in the past month. Training is done online. We are looking for healthcare professionals, 18 or older, both current or previously licensed, as well as students. So I'd ask you, those that are able to volunteer and that are interested in volunteering, to please go to the website. It's vamrc.org. I'll repeat that, vamrc.org, if you are able and willing to help. To put our equipment needs in perspective, in normal times, each one of the providers I listed, each one of those 10 providers uses a new mask, a new gown, and gloves each time they go into a room to see a patient. 10 care providers, as I previously outlined, providing 24-hour care gets you to about 240 items of PPE in a day per patient. Now, if you multiply that by a hospital that, let's say, has 40 ICU patients, you're at 10,000 PPE items in a day per hospital in our Commonwealth. And then in addition to our hospital staff, we also have law enforcement, we have first responders, and we have firefighters, all of whom require and need PPE. So that is why the need for equipment for PPE is just so, so great. It is literally in the millions. I have encouraged our medical providers to postpone elective surgeries. Today, I will sign an executive order directing them to do so. This will preserve bed space and also equipment, including ventilators and PPE. As I said yesterday, we have put in our second request for PPE to the national stockpile. We are working with companies to donate PPE that they have available, and we are working to source more from private vendors. The cooperation that I have seen across the Commonwealth has just literally been tremendous. And to all of you that have stepped up to the plate and pitched in, I say thank you. I will add, because states are literally competing for supplies, the prices that we are seeing from some private vendors has jumped. That is why we need a nationally led response, allowing the free market to determine availability and pricing is not the way we should be dealing with this national crisis at this time. I also want to provide an update on health facilities, that capacity of bed space. This week, my team and I spoke with the United States Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps can build emergency hospital bed capacity in sites that we identify for them. We are working to assess several potential locations in regions across Virginia should the need arise. The Corps operates by region, and Virginia is in the same region with the eastern states to our north. That means the same folks building out capacity in New York will be helping us in Virginia as well. When we have chosen sites, we will announce them. In other updates, we have made the decision to make our state parks day use only, meaning that we will close campgrounds, cabins, and bathhouses starting Friday morning. This is in line with what other states are doing, as well as some national parks. We are also moving quickly to get additional federal dollars to families that qualify for SNAP benefits for food. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act that Congress recently passed increases SNAP benefits for the next 2 months for households to purchase food. Those increased benefits will take effect tonight. I hope that when families can get more food in one trip, they will be able to make fewer trips to the grocery store. Now I'd like Virginia State epidemiologist Dr. Lillian Peek to provide us an update on our numbers across the Commonwealth. Dr. Peek, thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yesterday, 101 new cases were reported to the Virginia Department of Health, and that makes a total of 391 Virginians who've been diagnosed with COVID-19. Yesterday afternoon, I'm also sad to share that two deaths were reported, and these were both residents of the Canterbury Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center in Henrico County. And this morning, we heard about three additional deaths. Two are adults in the Peninsula Health District, and one is an adult in the Pennsylvania Danville Health District. Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you, Dr. Peek. Last night, the U.S. Senate reached agreement on a relief package. We're still working through the details, but I'd like to ask our Secretary of Finance, Aubrey Lane, to give you an update on what this may mean for us in Virginia. Secretary Lane, thank you.
Thank you, Governor, and good afternoon. Let me first start by thanking our federal and congressional leaders for reaching a deal on this much-needed $2 trillion stimulus package. And I would encourage them to pass this legislation promptly in order to get the money flowing. Now, this fiscal action, along with the extraordinary monetary measures taken by the Federal Reserve, offer assurances to individuals and businesses in the Commonwealth and across our country that they will be able to cope with the negative economic impact from this virus. Now, we still have not seen all the details. In fact, I was trying to read up on the roughly 1,000 pages that were sent to us. But I'm very encouraged by the comprehensive nature of this stimulus. So I'm going to go through a few of the broad categories, and this is not intended to be all-inclusive. From the very start, the governor and I have advocated for direct payments to individuals. And I'm pleased to say that there's $250 billion in direct payments to individuals, $1,200 individually, up to $2,400 for a married couple for those who qualify, and that's based on income levels. There's an additional $250 billion in enhanced unemployment benefits. And this allows the state to offer what it would normally do, unemployment benefits, plus $600 per week per individual for up to 4 months. And this will also include what's called gig employees, or those independent contractors that are typically not paid by a payroll withholding or a W-2. There's $130 billion for aid to hospitals to help, as what you just heard the governor mention, the type of resources that are needed to protect our first line responders that are attending to all those individuals who have become sick by this virus. There's $350 billion for loans and aid to small businesses. And a lot of those provisions allow those loans to be converted to grants if they meet special conditions. There's $500 billion for loans to large businesses, those that have been impacted significantly, those industries that have been impacted by the virus. And the key to that is there's key oversight provisions to make sure that those monies are used for keeping people employed. Most directly to the state of Virginia, there's $150 billion in state and local government aid, and there's a provision in there that says at a minimum, even a small state would receive $1.5 billion, and hopefully Virginia will get much more than that as we go through and see how it is divided up. And that will certainly help us mitigate the reduction in revenues that we're expecting because of the slowdown and, in some cases, stoppage of business in our Commonwealth. Now, there's also a host of other resources in there that deal with transportation, agriculture, our food supply, housing, student loan relief, among many other things. And as we get those details and it's passed, we'll be sure to make sure that we're utilizing them efficiently for the citizens here in the Commonwealth. Now, Governor Northam has stated repeatedly that this is not only a health crisis, but it's also an economic crisis. But the way to fix our economy is to deal with this health crisis. And this stimulus package affords us the ability to do so. So I would encourage all our citizens to heed the advice of the medical authorities and base their decisions on their public health based on facts and advice from their medical resources and authorities, not some arbitrary deadlines, because we want to make sure that these resources that are put out there to help us weather this storm are used wisely. And a way to do that is for everybody to heed the advice of the medical authorities. Thank you.
I have heard the press reports that Liberty University is inviting and welcoming students back to their campus in Lynchburg. We have heard too many mixed messages around the country about COVID-19, and this is yet another example. Our message has been clear, and it will continue to be clear. Stay home unless you have to leave for essential reasons. We appreciate our colleges and universities making accommodation for students with special cases, but that is very different from inviting students to leave their homes and come back to campus. As we are told in 1 Corinthians, it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. Proving faithful means providing clear and consistent guidance. And it means respecting the duty that Liberty University has to its students, its staff, the Lynchburg community in which it is located, and our Commonwealth. I would suggest that President Falwell look to the actions of the leaders of Virginia's flagship universities for how to set a strong example in this health crisis, and to please reconsider his message that invites and encourages students to return to campus.